With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Sabrina Halvorsen.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning on the AgNet News Hour. Coming up later, why the Fertilizer Institute is concerned with changes to the EPA's risk management program. We'll have more on that, but to start our day, we're talking about water. On the phone, we have two California water experts, and we'll start with them introducing themselves.
Yeah, good morning. I'm Michael France, a 14 or 15-year board member of the Turlock Irrigation District and a family partner at the France Wholesale Nursery located out in Hickman, California.
I am Tom Orvis. I am the Governmental Affairs Director for the Stanislaus County Farm Bureau in Modesto, California, and I'm also a board member of the Oakdale Irrigation District in Oakdale, California, on the Stanislaus River.
Great. All right. So we wanted to talk all about water today in California. And, you know, of course, anytime we're going to talk about water in California, it's going to be quite the conversation. But why don't we start out with any updates that are going on right now that either one of you guys would have for us?
Yeah, the Stanislaus right now is releasing about 1,500 cubic feet per second down from Goodwin Dam. New Maloney's Reservoir has topped 2 million acre feet in storage. You have to realize New Maloney's is a capacity of 2.4 million acre feet, but the Bureau rarely lets it go over about 2.1 or 2.2. You have to understand the geography of the Stanislaus River, whereas Michael is on the Tuolumne River. The Tuolumne is much wider and flatter, whereas the Stanislaus is much narrower canyons. So the Stanislaus does not have the ability to get much over 6,000 or 7,000 CFS going down the river when we do our releases. So they need to stay ahead and get water down instead of trying to do one big rush. But that's about where we're at right now. Our district, again, Oakdale and South San Joaquin share one water right on the Stanislaus River. And South San Joaquin Irrigation District will make water available to their customers tomorrow. And Oakdale will start to charge our system this weekend and make it available to our customers next Monday, the 18th of March.
Yes, Sabrina, we're sort of similarly blessed. You know, last year, 2023, was such an extremely wet year. The snow melt continued to come down throughout the summer. And so we were actually able to go into this winter, meaning the 23-24 winter, with a fairly full reservoir. And here we are barely in March, and we are bumping up against flood control space at Don Pedro. So the Tuolumne River has been running pretty high. We're, like Tom, we're releasing excess flows now in order to stay below the Army Corps' mandated flood control lines. We, too, are opening up our canal system next week and look forward to being able to provide a full allocation to our farmers for the 2024 growing season.
So when was the last time you guys were both able to say full allocation or, you know, we're happy with the water supplies? Because it seems like it's maybe been a while.
I have a little thing I say in Stanislaus County, and you have to understand the foresight of our forefathers in Stanislaus County. Stanislaus County to the west is divided by the San Joaquin River. And I have a saying that on the west side of the San Joaquin River are the have-nots, and on the east side of the San Joaquin are the haves. And when I mean haves, the Tuolumne, the Merced, and the Stanislaus Rivers, where we have large storage facilities on the other end, and our irrigation districts have done, our forefathers, Michael is with Turlock Irrigation District, the first irrigation district formed in the state of California, and Oakdale was formed in 1909. And so we're some of the oldest districts, but we have some of the most senior water rights in the state. And so much of the water, the agriculture on the east side of the San Joaquin is irrigated with surface water from those districts or has access to surface water from those districts, whereas the west side is usually on the state and federal projects. So we will often have full access to water and allocation on our side of the river, whereas on the west side of the Salentine, it's a gamble every year.
And Sabrina, your question sort of points to the topic of the day for me, which is to talk a little bit about the challenges of an irrigation district to continue to provide the historical reliability that our constituents and owners have consistently been blessed with and have built their lives around in a changing time. Last year was extremely wet, so last year, 2023, we had full allocations, as we were going to have again this year, but the 3 years before that, meaning 2020, 2021, and 2022, were all dry years, and some years very dry. And so we have these swings that we can document on the Tuolumne based on our long records of tracking how much snowfall we receive on any given year that show that the rivers are, the watersheds are getting increased precip on wet years and even drier amounts than they have historically received on dry years. And so the total annual over, say, a 10-year period of runoff ends up being the same. It just all comes down at one time. And so for farmers who have permanent crops planted, vineyards, orchards that rely on a steady, consistent release of water, it's very challenging for the reservoir operators to provide that in an ever-changing climate.
We are going to continue this conversation throughout the show today, but when we come back, we'll update you on the latest national ag news, and we will have our livestock report. We will be back in just a moment. You're listening to the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Jewish practice advocacy groups and kosher meat institutions filed a legal challenge last week against the Canadian government and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. Dennis Guy reports.
A coalition of Jewish organizations say that new industry regulations is putting the future of Canadian origin kosher beef at risk. Since the CFIA rules came into force last year, three of Canada's six kosher beef abattoirs have ceased, leaving the three remaining kosher beef plants all located in Quebec. Richard Rabkin of the Kashruth Council of Canada and a kosher meat certifier says the core conflict is in ritual Jewish slaughter practices versus modern societal concerns of limiting animal suffering at point of slaughter. CFIA rules say the most humane way of cattle slaughter involves the use of a bolt-action stun gun to the animal's brain first to render the animal unconscious. But use of a stun gun violates Jewish rules. Ritual stipulates animals must be completely unblemished when slaughtered with a surgically sharpened knife blade drawn deeply across the throat. Richard Rabkin says the CFIA is ignoring long-standing research and reports by scientists, doctors, and veterinarians who report that when Jewish slaughter practices are done by an expert, the animal feels no pain.
Shechita is completely humane, and through this process, we have garnered the support of a number of world-renowned experts, doctors, scientists, that kosher slaughter, shechita, is totally humane, and the animal does not feel the pain. There may be the animal has some sort of a nervous reaction after the shechita, but it does not feel any pain whatsoever. That is really ultimately the question.
Guidelines do not specifically require stunning, but do stipulate that without stunning, a cow must pass several neurological tests. Those include three separate eye reflex tests taken 20 seconds apart to ensure the cow is brain dead before any further processing. Abattoirs say these delays have now made kosher meat processing highly inefficient for a commercial environment. Since last year, Canadian kosher cattle numbers have dropped to just over 20% of their previous slaughter numbers. To make up for the Canadian beef shortfall, kosher beef is being imported from Argentina, Mexico, and the U.S. Rabbi Solomon Emmanuel in Montreal says the Canadian kosher beef shortage is a concern, but under these rules, he understands meatpacking plants move away from kosher.
Slaughterhouses want to operate to the maximum. Some of the slaughterhouses have said, we are not doing this, and they are scared that the CFIA inspector is going to come and close them down, so they risk getting a fine and a bad record, so they are nervous to proceed with kosher slaughter.
The joint statement by Jewish organizations indicate they are challenging the constitutionality of the new meat industry regulations under the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Reporting from Canada, I'm Dennis Guy.
Will margins this year for milk producers in the U.S. be any better than last year? Gary Crawford looks into it.
Is 2024 turning into a better year than 2023 for milk producers?
Yeah, I would say so.
USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Czekanowski has some good reasons for saying that. First, milk production this year will be up, but by less than a billion pounds. And of course,
tighter supplies lead to higher prices, and including higher product prices.
They're being driven up by very strong demand for products like cheese and butter, and that's pushing milk price prospects up.
The all milk price, incorporating all of the different classes and products, the all milk price this month we raised by 30 cents per hundredweight to $21.25 per hundredweight, up 77 cents per hundredweight year over year.
Meanwhile, feed costs generally are running lower than a year ago.
So if you're looking at dairy margins, signs suggest that margins should be improving.
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
That's today's National Spotlight. Now here's Will Jordan with the Livestock Report.
In today's Livestock News, a story on the competitive artistry of a dairy product fan favorite. In today's Livestock News, have you ever thought about what actually makes cheese good besides that you like the taste of it? Jill Allen of Tillamook Cheese in Oregon served as an official judge for this year's World Championship Cheese Contest. She shares some insight into what she looks for.
It's fairly fast. You know, you see a beautiful piece of cheese. It's put on your table. The presentation is gorgeous of it. You connect with the product once you pull your first plug. You're smelling the aroma on it. It's got some inviting flavors to it. You warm the piece of cheese up in your fingers if it's we're grating hard cheeses. And then we're going to taste it and feel it. And you get that overall sense of this is a cheese that has no defects to it, whether it's for, you know, to convert or to further age out. And it just all comes together, and that final showpiece of, yes, this one is an amazing piece of cheese with no defects.
Judges try hundreds of cheeses throughout the competition and work hard to remain unbiased. I'm Will Jordan for Agnet West.
This is the Agnet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. We'll be back in just a moment with more agriculture news. Coming up in a few moments, today's This Land of Ours report, but first, more of the day's agriculture news. With today's Agnet West headlines, here's Brian German.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is seeking nominations for the Hass Avocado Board to fill 8 seats that are set to expire on October 31st. Seats include 4 for domestic producers and 4 for importers, each with 2 regular members and 2 alternates. Nominees can apply for all eligible open seats. Appointed members will serve 3-year terms beginning November 1st and ending October 31st, 2027. The current 12-member board is comprised of 7 producer members, 2 importer members, and 3 swing members. The board itself is industry-funded and supports the national marketing and promotion of Hass avocados. Voting will take place online, and industry members will need to register by April 15th to receive an e-ballot to be able to cast their vote. The deadline for applications is April 1st, and additional details are available at hassavocadoboard.com. The Fertilizer Institute has raised concerns regarding the Environmental Protection Agency's new rule for its risk management program. TFI highlighted potential issues with national security due to public disclosure requirements, arguing that sharing information about chemicals used in fertilizer production could pose risks. The Institute emphasized the industry's long-standing commitment to safe fertilizer production and collaboration with regulatory agencies to reduce risks. TFI believes that the current RMP system, which has been in place since 1996, has been effective in decreasing reportable incidents. The Institute opposes the EPA's changes, asserting that they will not enhance safety but instead jeopardize communities by disclosing detailed chemical information. EPA's issuance of the final rule concludes a 7-year process to revise and enhance existing RMP requirements. The U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Department of Energy have initiated the Rural and Agricultural Income and Savings from Renewable Energy Program. Known as the RAISE program, the initiative aims to assist farmers in reducing costs and increasing income through underutilized renewable technologies such as smaller-scale wind projects. The USDA's initial goal is to aid 400 farmers in deploying such projects utilizing funding provided by the Inflation Reduction Act. The DOE is also allocating $4 million for testing and commercialization of distributed wind technologies and for developing new business models for farmers. Both departments will offer technical assistance and support for grant applications. The initiatives garnered praise from organizations like the Distributed Wind Energy Association and the Agricultural Energy Coalition for its potential to expand renewable energy adoption in rural America. The McKay Point Reservoir continues to make forward progress. General Manager of the Tulare Irrigation District, Aaron Fukuda, described some of the details of the project and where they're at in the process.
We released the environmental impact report that's out for a 45-day public review. That's a large surface water reservoir that the district is pursuing to try and solve some of our surface water storage needs. We're developing a site near the bifurcation of the Kauia River into the lower Kauia and the St. John's River. It's right off the main channel there, and we're going to dig a hole there. We're partnering with a mining operation to dig that hole, and the material that comes out of that excavation will be sold into the local market. So we get a benefit of not having to truck aggregate in for our local construction, plus we get the hole in the ground when they're done, and then we'll turn that into a reservoir with an inlet and outlet and all that kind of good stuff.
Nominations are being accepted for the 2024 California Leopold Conservation Award. Sand County Foundation and national sponsor American Farmland Trust present the Leopold Conservation Award to private landowners for extraordinary achievement in voluntary conservation. In California, the $10,000 award is presented with State Partners Sustainable Conservation and California Farm Bureau Federation. The first award was given out in 2006, with Park Farming Organics of Meridian receiving the award in 2023. Nominations can be submitted on behalf of a landowner, or landowners can also nominate themselves. Applications are reviewed by an independent panel of agricultural and conservation leaders. The award will be presented at CFBF's annual meeting in December. Applications are due by July 18th, and more information on how to apply is available at leopoldconservationaward.org. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Do you know a student with livestock experience? There's a scholarship opportunity now open for students who want to work with animals. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. Purina Animal Health and the Land O'Lakes Foundation have opened their joint scholarship program designed to assist students who have experience in agriculture and livestock production in pursuing their education. Undergraduate students and current high school seniors who have experience in raising and caring for small or large livestock, equine or poultry, are eligible to apply for one of four $5,000 scholarships. Along with the impact animal agriculture has had on their lives, desired applicants have proven academic excellence, leadership skills, community involvement, and a clear vision for their future. Applicants will write about a valuable life experience they gained from caring for farm animals. You can submit a scholarship application from March 18th through April 17th. More information is available online. You can find a link on our website, agnetwest.com. Thank you, Brian. We will continue our conversation on California water when we come back. This is the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back. I'm talking today with Michael Franz, a board member of the Turlock Irrigation District, and Tom Orvis, the Governmental Affairs Director for the Stanislaus County Farm Bureau, also a board member with the Oakdale Irrigation District. We continue the conversation. You know, I always feel for you guys because, I mean, there are situations that obviously you just can't control. You cannot make it snow or you cannot make it rain. So you have to deal with the hand that's dealt pretty much. But like you said, it's always nice when you are able to provide the consistency in what growers are, you know, what they're expecting or what they've had on the good side. So, you know, speaking of challenges, I know that storage has been a challenge, but has there been any, and again, that's not up to you guys again, but is there any type of an update there, anything that's moving forward or heard of any legislation or anything to help get some storage for when we have these good wet years like this?
Well, I'll tackle that for the Tuolumne River. You are correct that we really are not able, obviously, to make it snow, and so we have to deal with the hand we're dealt. That being said, we are embracing new technology in order to help inform our decisions and make sure we're doing the best thing we can with the resources that our parents and grandparents handed off to us. On the Tuolumne, we have been, for a number of years now, using LIDAR, which is, we call it Airborne Snow Observatory, or ASO for short. And the ASO has replaced the historic measuring with snowshoes and a long pole, like we've seen on the pictures for our whole lives, to determine the amount of water in the watershed. And instead, we're flying airplanes over the mountains and taking literally millions of readings on to determine the exact depth of the snow. And with that information, we're able to either, in the case of last year, we started releasing earlier than most of the other reservoir operators in the state, and other times we've been able to get the Corps, Army Corps, to deviate and let us encroach into flood control space because we can prove to them that there's not much water going to be coming down in the later summer months. And so it's not really new storage, but we're able to better maximize the storage that we have by bringing to the table better information and better understanding of what's actually in the watershed.
And from the Stanislaus River, I have to say that, you know, what Michael just talked about and the way they do things and the way the TID team manages the water in New Dom Pedro Reservoir literally on a razor's edge is a beautiful dance to watch. It's, you know, we're all very envious of how they do it because they really are, you know, they are really something to envy in how they manage water. And at the same time, they do that delicate dance, save water for their customers, and also protect the public downstream. That's something very, you know, admirable, and we appreciate what they do. On the Stanislaus River, we have a different type of water right. We have a use-it-or-lose-it water right, whereas Oakdale and South San Joaquin have our water right is the first 600,000 acre feet that come into New Maloney's each year, regardless of water year, and it is an adjudicated right. So it's been through the court system and confirmed. So as far as more storage, I think some of the things that we're all doing, we use what's called a total channel control system in from Rubicon. Our storage tends to be more using our system. We have unlined canals, and so by using that system, we also get more groundwater penetration. Much like Michael and TID, they're using regulating reservoirs. Oakdale has two regulating reservoirs as well, and it gives us a better opportunity to control our water and manage our water so we have less waste. But at the same time, as we can keep it in our canals, we also are getting greater groundwater recharge through our canal system. So same concepts, just different variations of how we do things. But as far as storage in the state of California, many bonds have been passed. And other than Sites Reservoir, I really do not see any surface water style projects anywhere in the near future. Maybe some dams being raised. Being talked about, but that's all I see coming.
Maybe I'll jump in here real quick, Sabrina, and just sort of back up what Tom's saying. Tom's being very kind in complimenting the way the Turlock Irrigation District staff maintains and operates the TID dam system, including the Modesto Reservoir, Modesto side of the situation as well. But I would like to say that the Oakdale Irrigation District has really been leaders in the way they have automated their canal system. This total channel control was first implemented by the Oakdale Irrigation District. They located these really advanced operators out of Australia called Rubicon, and they have found ways to make canal systems not only more efficient, but also provide better customer service by automating and providing more rapid changes to how the water is moved down throughout the day to meet farmers' requests and demands, and doing so in a way that doesn't have any excess spills being discharged into the river at the bottom. And so in essence, even though we're not increasing our dam size and increasing our storage, by operating more efficiently, we could save 2, 3, 4, maybe even 7 or 8% of the total water that's diverted out of the river and have it all end up, or most of it end up on farm. And so it's not new storage, but it feels like new storage when you're able to shave your historic diversion quantity down and yet not short the farmer anything on farm. So it's pretty exciting to see new technology being implemented. Turlock is copying and trying to innovate like Oakdale's doing by adding not only total channel control in our canals, but also these regulating reservoirs that offer this additional bubble or space halfway down our system, or maybe even at the tail end of our system, because we're a large, you know, miles and miles of canals. And so by having these additional measures in place, we're able to not only provide more reliability, but better service. And it's something that Oakdale pioneered and we're all benefiting from.
You're listening to the AgNet News Hour. We will continue with this conversation right after this. Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. We continue our conversation on water with Michael Franz, a board member with the Turlock Irrigation District, and Tom Orvis, the Governmental Affairs Director for the Stanislaus County Farm Bureau and also a board member with the Oakdale Irrigation District.
You know, I've heard some about the new technologies that are being utilized to, you know, increase efficiency and just make sure that, like you said, that everything's being used the best that in the best way possible. Is there more technology that you'd like to explain, or have we covered it all?
From our point with the Rubicons and the total channel control, our former general manager set out upon a plan in probably 2000, and we did something called a water resources plan. And so it took all of our resources and put them down on paper, and, you know, and it includes diversions and other things, and said, okay, now let's evaluate the age of our system. Much of our system is 100 years old, so we only have probably a little over 100 miles of pipeline. So Oakdale is set upon, as I'm sure TID and MID and others have, upon you have to replace things. They only have a shelf life of so long, and so as we take out the older pipelines and facilities, we bring in the newer, more efficient. So you gain efficiency that way, but as and that comes under total channel control. And you know, you can have a district service operator from his iPad and laptop controlling water flows, and then that backs all the way up and controls the flows coming out of those regulating reservoirs. So you're, as I said, you get the recharge aspect, but you also get the customer service aspect. Not quite water on demand, getting pretty close. And, you know, we are in the customer service business, but we're also managing the most vital resource for not only our customers, but also our communities. So that's kind of where we're at. Now, Michael, he can talk about solar. I think they got something neat going on with solar that they're getting ready to embark on.
Well, before I go there, I just want to make a couple more comments about technology and furthering, or sort of growing the pie, right? Your first initial question was, what are we doing to grow our storage? And the answer is that's pretty hard in this state. And so how can we nip around the edges to achieve similar results? Total channel control, of course, by reducing spills, that is provides a more efficient system. The other one is, how do we better bolster our groundwater? And one of the ways that we do that is by trying to capture these flood flows when they come down on these wet years and put them on farm and soak the water into the ground to help rejuvenate our aquifers. So TID, last year, we filed for the first time, we filed additional water rights to be able to secure and have the right to divert water during these excessive wet years. Our water rights are such that normally the farmers don't need or care to have the water on their farm during wet cycles. And so TID doesn't have the right to divert from rivers when the rivers are high. We want to change that. We believe that through recharge basins that could be put around the community, through encouraging farmers who still have the ability to flood irrigate on crops that are receptive to it, like grapes, for example, or maybe land that's lying fallow. We want to continue to encourage and urge farmers to take advantage of those big gulp moments when the water is really coming down and find a way to keep it around the community for that next dry cycle that we know is just around the corner. So we filed for those flood flow rights. We haven't heard back yet from the State Water Board about the status of them, but we're hoping to see them approved, and we hope to be able to continue to advance these programs and hope to see better participation as farmers become more aware of the benefits of capturing the water when it's available.
And something, Sabrina, our forefathers did, and in Michael's case, that the Turlock Irrigation District, Modesto Irrigation District, and the City and County of San Francisco built the new Don Pedro on the Stanislaus. The federal government built New Maloney, so it's part of the Central Valley Project. But unfortunately, hindsight says they put the wrong dam in the wrong place. Michael should have the 2.4 million acre foot dam because his watershed yields much more water every year. And on the Stanislaus, if we had the 2 million acre foot dam, number one, we'd be full right now. But number two, our watershed has about half the annual yield of the Tuolumne River. So it's something that would be interesting, but we will both take what we have right now. And I think all of our districts around here do the utmost to be extremely efficient and are working towards greater efficiencies with this most valuable resource that we all have been charged with being stewards of.
If only we had a time machine, right? We could tell exactly what was needed where.
We'll be back with the conclusion of this conversation right after this. We continue now our conversation. We are talking this morning with Michael Franz and Tom Orvis.
I think it would be worthwhile to spend just a few minutes talking about SGMA. You know, as a district director, that's one of the big questions I get on a regular basis, mostly because I'm an east side director like Tom, and so I have a lot of neighbors who are just outside the boundaries of the Turlock Irrigation District. And like Tom mentioned earlier about the east and the west and the haves and the have-nots, sort of uncomfortable to talk about, but it's just the reality that there are these arbitrary lines that dictate whether a parcel of land is in or out of a surface water providing irrigation district. And here in the inside the Turlock Irrigation District, we have neighbors to our east and we have neighbors to our west that are outside the boundary lines and who rely exclusively on groundwater pumping to nurture their crops. And we have filed on all of our behalf a plan with Department of Water Resources last year, a groundwater sustainability plan, and that plan was recently deemed incomplete. So we received the big thumbs down from DWR. They're A, requesting more information, and B, they're looking for us to have better mitigation measures to minimize the impacts from our outlying east and west impacts from our neighbors who do not have the luxury of pumping surface water. And so we're working with our neighbors, and we desire a positive outcome for everyone, recognizing that there's only so much water to go around. And so we're trying to figure out ways where we can keep our neighbors whole, but also recognize that we can't bring a plan to DWR that shows too drastic of drawdowns between the time now and the 2040 deadline of when we have to be sustainable. So we're working through it, Sabrina, but SGMA is very real. It has become real pretty fast in my area in Hickman, where I'm right on the line. I see my neighbors at church and at the baseball games, and it's a big concern. And so I think we have plans, we have projects to recharge. We're trying to encourage people to continue to take advantage of our excess surface water on those occasional wet years in order to in lieu recharge, meaning use surface water instead of pumping. So there's things that we can do as a community, but the reality is SGMA is still a work in progress, and there's a lot of consternation around how it will ultimately be rolled out in the greater Stanislaus County region.
Yes, I'd have to echo Michael's thoughts because we too got the thumbs down on the north side of the Tuolumne River for the exact same reason. And I think that both of our districts have a long history of being adders to the aquifer. When we do our ag water management plans, we see that we both, within our footprint, add to the aquifers and you know, basin storage underground. I think it was interesting because I'll go back to the Bay Delta Water Quality Control Plan. We call it the Supplemental Environmental Draft. Some people nickname it the Unimpaired Flows. But during those hearings and their environmental impact report, duly noted that if the state of California, Department of Water Resources, if they take an additional 40% of the unimpaired flows off of our local rivers here. And they're talking about 55% off of the Sacramento system. But we're on the San Joaquin tributary system. If they took an additional 40% of our natural flows from February 1 to June 30, there would be a significant and unavoidable impact to groundwaters, including up to 25% increase in groundwater pumping. Follow that with the same state regulatory agency just a few years later, and Michael brought up the word SGMA, Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, and SGMA says, you can't pump. So here we have a perfect storm for our districts and for our constituents and the people within our districts to do that greater balancing act. Will it be a challenge? Yes. As I said before, I think in our ag water management plan, we've shown that our areas benefit from what we do with surface water. And it's not only us. You know, on the Stanislaus, our partners, the South San Joaquin Irrigation District, and on the Tuolumne, Michael's partners, the Modesto Irrigation District. And but it's very interesting to watch, I call it the Sigma Dance, because groundwater really is our water of last resort. And when it's dry up on top, we still have our groundwater to pull from. And Oakdale and now Modesto have done out-of-district contracts when water is, extra water is available to some of the people outside of our boundaries. And of course, there's a charge to it. But some of these growers have grabbed a hold and literally built storage facilities where they can put excess water, whether it's from a district or they get a right to pump off of the creek and fill them. But some of them have grabbed a hold of the technology to build these storage facilities, and some of them are adding turnouts from local irrigation districts where they can take that water premium, all in the goal of reducing their groundwater pumping. Are our districts responsible for what our neighbors to the east have done and are doing? No. In no way are our districts responsible for that. But these are management decisions that our neighbors have made, and we're taking an opportunity to try and help our neighbors for the greater good of all of our communities and our districts as well.
And Sabrina, maybe I'll just try to wrap it up on a optimistic note and say that, you know, in the 15 years that I've been a director, we've had, it feels like about as many drought years as we have wet years. And it's a whole lot more fun to be a director when there's enough water to go around. And so, you know, the farming community, it's economically in very challenging straits right now. It doesn't matter if you're in almonds, if you're in walnuts, if you're in dairy. A lot of hardships. And so it's a real blessing to be in a state that right now has plenty of water, and even more so to be in an irrigation district like Oakdale and Turlock and Modesto that we care so passionate about trying to maintain our historic reliability. We're doing so with investing ratepayer dollars into this new technology, and we're committed to the next 100 years. And I'm incredibly optimistic about the prospects of being a farmer in Stanislaus County, for not only for me, but for my kids and my grandkids. We're blessed to be here.
That's today's Top Agriculture News. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Thank you for sharing your morning with us.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Brian German and Sabrina Halverson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.